Good morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday, August 7th, 2018. It is 9 a.m. We're assembled in the Board of County Commissioners Conference Room for a general discussion. First item on our agenda is social media archiving, and John McCafferty requested that we move that to the legal council meeting today at 1 p.m. So any objection to that?
No.
The commissioners? Okay, so let it be done. Item number two is request for non-union insurance structure change. J.J. Schofield will give us a presentation on that.
Good morning, commissioners.
Do you need to come up?
Maybe for moral support.
He's on his own on this one. Have a seat.
All right. Here's a few different things here for you.
I can tell you my email on my phone is blown up over this topic.
I would suggest is rather than going over this that we request you put together a group of the non-unions in a meeting. And you can just have them discuss it, because I don't think we're prepared to make... I'm not prepared to make a decision today.
I'm not going to support it until we get somewhere.
Let's have a discussion.
I hear you.
That's what I would say. So
the managers were upset yesterday, too.
I'm saying I do. I just say that I think we need to make some steps first. And so if you could host that, I think that would be time well spent.
I'm 100% willing to do that. The challenge I have is timing.
Well, it doesn't matter, JJ, because right now the answer is no. So if you don't do it, we don't do anything. There's a step that was missed here. And it's not a big deal. We can get through that. Have it today. Have it tomorrow. Whatever it takes, it will show up. But that is a step that has to be taken. And in order for me to feel comfortable that I'm not going to have a significant amount of non-union backlash as a result of this, it's not going to be positive. So we can get through this.
The managers weren't happy yesterday and felt ignored. And that's a concern. It's not just meet with them. It's actually hear them and take into consideration what they're saying. And if that's not done, the other thing is we need to look real closely at House Bill 2005 from the 17 year, which is the equity pay law that goes in effect January 1, and it suggests that this would not be in compliance with that. So that's another thing that we would have to look at.
It's definitely things to talk about.
We're talking over $3,500 each individual difference a year. That's a big hit in compensation. So anyhow.
That's where we need to spend our time.
What's the time constraint? What's your concern about time? Is there a window like Medicare or Medicaid that you can only...
I've already received my open enrollment package.
No, the only issue is that upper enrollment is coming in. The only reason why it... Normally, I would take this quite a bit sooner. I would have brought it to the board 3 or 4 weeks ago. The only reason I didn't is because the AFSCME contract negotiations were dragging on, dragging on. We couldn't get them to move off of their position.
What does that have to do with the non-union? I don't understand that.
Well, what I didn't want to advocate was to have the non-union group have lesser insurance, frankly, than what was going to be offered for the union groups. I don't want the non-union group having less insurance than the union group. So we were hoping to get the contract, TA'd, and ultimately if we hadn't have TA'd it, we couldn't wait any longer. We're going to bring it forth regardless. As it turned out, we were able to TA a contract.
I don't necessarily know or understand or endorse that strategy, but either way, the time is what it is. The discussion has to happen, and so that's your charge from me, and I think the board so far of heard board. One to
yeah,
board. Support
yeah,
this.
I see merit.
You have to sell us. I mean, that's an element, but a big element of convincing us that this is the best thing. Fiscally, I understand it's a wash for the county. That's fine.
I don't believe it is, because you're going to have a massive switch of people off of some of the plans they're on right now, and it's going to, in the end, probably cost the county a lot more.
Without the conversation and knowing where people are going to go, it is a definite possibility.
Well, and the numbers
I wouldn't
put together,
stay on the same plan I'm on with this. I would switch.
The numbers we put together, Arthur and I worked on it, and we assumed a 10% swing of people moving to family plans would be more expensive. So
that sounds pretty conservative.
And I've heard from both managers and non-managers that they are upset they weren't consulted or part of the conversation. Offers to have conversations have not been heeded. So pulling that non-union group together would be appropriate to get feedback. And
yeah,
We're talking 35 single people in non-union and 41 that are not.
Historically, we've had this kind of conversation before we made some of these changes. So I think that that's really important. So let's not belabor the subject. Let's just...
Yeah, I think, you've heard from... I think it's something that has to happen. I mean, the board says so.
Well, ultimately, you have said we're not going to vote on this until we've had the discussion. Any objection is irrelevant. My point is you were my boss.
Okay.
So I will absolutely do that.
That's the message I hoped to convey.
Yeah.
So.
And the answer I wanted to hear. I'm happy to get it done. I'm happy to get it done. Thank you, JJ.
All right.
Thanks.
Let us know when you're getting further on that. Okay. Item number 3, Rogue River Watershed Council presentation. Brian Barr, Executive Director for the Rogue River Watershed Council, is with us today.
All
Brian,
right.
Welcome.
Thank
Before
you,
we
guys.
Move off of that, pardon me, Mr. Barr. No, you feel free to sit down. It's just a small thing.
Yeah.
Somehow we need a delegate of the board, I think, to participate in that meeting. I think that there's an opportunity for an objective person, as I won't be here to really appreciate it either way.
And he doesn't get it, the insurance. I don't mean you don't get it, but he doesn't receive it, so he's not affected.
You're definitely
I'm affected.
I don't get it either.
Passionate about this.
Only because my phone has blown up.
Mine too.
Yeah.
We all have that, Commissioner Morgan. There's an ability to check the...
I hear you.
So I would like to participate in that and try to help stabilize, guide us all through this challenge if I could.
Are you comfortable with him doing that, Commissioner Morgan?
Well, we're all going to still have a vote on it way.
Yeah.
But
whatever comes back,
the managers.
Come back to
what I'm worried about is that we don't get the degree of conversation. We don't explore it to the
level. The managers had a lot to say and didn't feel heard. The non-union, that's the concern, too.
I want to be able to convey that to you guys.
Well, I think it's the value is in that there's a commissioner there that is hearing it.
Okay.
He's not getting it back through...
Yep.
Other channels, you're actually saying, no, that isn't what was said.
Okay.
So I
will
there you
make myself
Commissioner
available
Morgan
for that.
Assigning that to Commissioner Hare, does that
Fine.
Work for you? Okay. Then you'll do that. Thank you, Simon, for offering. Okay, back to item number 3.
Brief interruption.
No, that's fine.
It wasn't an interruption. That was you
Ryan.
Continuing on with that. Doesn't. Oh, good. I can restart my stopwatch. 7 to 10 minutes, I said, and I will try to...
We're ahead of
schedule.
Okay. Just fine.
Well, take the time that you need. I can move this along pretty quickly, and if you guys have follow-up questions, that's great. A couple of things. So I am the executive director of the Rogue River Watershed Council. Watershed councils were formed back in the mid-90s. It was an effort between the governor's office, ODFNW, Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, to an attempt to stave off listing of salmon species and try to address water quality issues, mostly by working voluntarily with private landowners throughout the state of Oregon. On December 31st of 2014, there were 9 different watershed councils in the Rogue Basin from Gold Beach to Crater Lake. 4 of those councils merged on January 1st, 2015. Upper Rogue Watershed Association, Little Butte Creek Watershed Council, Bear Creek Watershed Council, and the Stream Restoration Alliance for the Middle Rogue, which was the local sort of Grants Pass area watershed council. They merged to form the Rogue River Watershed Council. So I'm going to give you a little update on sort of what we've been up to for the last year and a little glimpse at what we're going to be working on over the next 12 months. I'm going to flip to the first slide here. By the way, you all got a copy of my business card. If you have any questions, give me a call, shoot me an email. I'm going to start with outreach because outreach is something that kind of gets glossed over frequently with watershed councils. Again, this is a way that we use outreach as a way to try to get our mission out to the residents of the parts of Jackson and Josephine County that we work with. And again, these are communities around Grants Pass up to Wolf Creek in Josephine County and then most of Jackson County. So we took the lead on 6 different events. These are usually like festivals or fairs, something like that, where we invite people to come in and inform them about watershed health issues, salmon populations, and water quality, and what individuals in our communities can be doing to help improve water quality and improve native fish populations. We participated in 10 different events. We reached a grand total of about 2,300 people, although probably a fair number of those people were the same people. We worked with the Oregon State University Extension folks to put on a program called Stream School, associated with their Living on Your Land conference, which is a conference that's held over at RCC Redwood campus. And 100 people attended the 9 sessions that Rogue River Watershed Council put together for Stream School. Also worked with OSU Extension on an Oregon Master Naturalist course. About 15 people took that class. We have a newsletter that we send out 4 times a year to about 400 people, and we send those same people monthly updates.
Do we get a copy of that?
The very end of your packet, there is a copy of both, a recent newsletter and then a monthly friends update. We organize hikes. About 45 people have participated in the 3 hikes that we put on the last couple of years. We have a hike coming up to Rainy Falls, should these fires allow us to get there.
You should be fine.
Great. And then at the end of the year, in October-ish, we have a celebration that's been in Medford last year. It will also be in Medford this year. About 90 people came to that last year. We're hoping for about 200 this year. Last year, we found a fisheries biologist who's a regionally renowned opera singer to be our entertainment. I don't think we'll be that creative this year, but we're going to do something entertainment-wise, and then we have an auction.
Our veterans have a nice band.
Oh, really?
Have you partnered at all, and I think you guys have, with the Rogue Cleanup sponsored by our park system?
Yes, okay. We have.
That might be something you could maybe take in the lead, but...
Right, and continue to help with. Yeah, we've helped the Middle Rogue folks. We also do
really key
Upper Rogue. The picture, by the way, is from, we did a World Fish Migration Day event. That was one of the lead events that we did at North Middle School, and we organized a 5K race. About 70 people came to that. It was a really rainy, blustery day in April. I think if the weather had been nicer, we'd have done a little better. Next slide is just a picture of the green area is the area that we operate in. It's about 1.6 million acres, roughly 50% of the Rogue Basin. The following slide is the exact same map with a couple of orange ovals on it. Those orange ovals sort of indicate the places that we try to focus our on-the-ground restoration activity. Again, mostly thinking about the reason why watershed councils were formed in the first place, which was to help fish species that were listed under the Endangered Species Act. The fish that we have here in the Rogue that's listed as coho salmon, these are the places where coho are doing okay, and we can, with a focused effort, make some improvements that will result in sort of tangible benefits to the
fish population. Why is 7 basins just cut right out of the middle of that? Were they here first and you guys moved around them, or vice versa?
Originally there were 9 watershed councils in the Rogue. When the merger process started, 7 Basins was included as one of the councils that was thinking about merging. And for a variety of reasons that were very important to 7 Basins, they decided not to merge. So it's rather unfortunate because they were the one council that sort of provides continuity between the Middle Rogue and the Upper Rogue.
But is your mission statement the same? In other words,
yeah,
you do all this work over here and all this work over here, and then they have a whole different set of criteria?
They have the same sort of same general mission, but the way that they go about it is maybe a little bit different. They have more of a focus on education and outreach, less of a focus on the ground restoration. We're kind of a muddy boots organization. But we work very closely with them. Communications are good. We share resources. It's not too big of a deal.
On that tour in Tillamook we did, they have 3 watershed councils for the whole county. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting.
3 in the county?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think every region is different. In eastern Oregon, the watershed councils are enormous, like the whole of Malheur County. One county, but it's a huge, twice the size of Rhode Island.
There's a real emphasis over in Jackson County for piping irrigation in the Big Falls area.
Yeah.
Are you guys involved in that?
On the edges. We work really closely with the Jackson Soil and Water Conservation District and Rogue River Valley Irrigation District. Our emphasis tends to be more right in the stream and on the banks of the stream, but we work with those guys.
Is a little lost on me. I mean, water can be created or destroyed, and so when it's displaced in certain areas, you think you're helping something, but at the end of the day, you might not be doing that at all.
Yeah.
The inefficiency in the system might be an asset, not
right.
a liability,
yeah.
but people get so caught up in trying to keep every drop in the stream and
Right.
You know, historically, I was going to ask...
Groundwater recharge is one of the things that happens
when
those leaky ditches.
Yeah, that segues into my thought of, like, people talk about restoration from a standpoint, and they leave out a critical element of ecology pre-man was the beaver being, you know, just everywhere.
Yeah.
And we've eradicated them to the degree where there is no dams in the wintertime, or the summertime, rather, that kind of recharge the whole system gradually over the summer and provide greater, you know, humidity, the whole thing.
Yeah, you know, so without getting too sidetracked, but I think it's an important thing. So we're super interested in restoration of that particular critter because of the its ability to flood the landscape, raise the water table, keep streams closer to the surface. Instead, now we've got streams that are sort of incised down.
And keep the riparian areas in check the wrong size.
The challenges that communities have a hard time dealing with beavers. They like to plug culverts. They like to plug diversion ditches. And so there's some cohabitation issues.
It's job security for people in Boulder Woods.
Well, it could be job security for people in Boulder Woods. I'd be super anxious if you guys were excited about talking with ODF&W. ODF&W is not a very strong proponent of getting beaver back on the landscape. And so one of our biggest challenges actually in the beaver conversation is working with ODF&W on it. They're not keen on it.
They're happy to reintroduce bears and wolves.
Bears and wolves, but not beavers. Right. No, I totally agree. Totally agree.
Don't. Please don't get that. We don't have enough time here.
I'm already biting
my tongue. So
pour through just a handful of projects. I'm going to warn you in advance that a lot of the big efforts that we've done in the last year or so are on the Jackson County side of the line. That's not for lack of effort. We're having a hard time gaining traction, although that's starting to happen in the Grave Creek system in Josephine County. So I think if in the next 2 or 3 years we're not doing more work in Josephine County, I will have failed as the ED of the Rogue River Watershed Council. We just built a large project on Little Butte Creek on a City of Eagle Point property. They were having some big erosion issues. You can kind of see in the back, there's some guys in the middle of this picture that gives you an idea of the scale of the logs that we put in the creek. And then way in the back, you can see this cut bank. So that cut bank is about 12 feet high. We laid that bank down, put in some wood structures to try to keep erosion from happening on that bank, laid the floodplain back. We're going to plant it this winter. Eagle Point's super happy with that project. It was about a $175,000 effort. On each of these slides that talk about projects, I give the landowner's concern on top and then the Watershed Council's concern, thinking about the natural resources on the bottom, just so you can kind of track it. Their concern was erosion. Our concern was floodplain and off-channel habitat for juvenile coho rearing. A Josephine County project right here along Gilbert Creek at North Middle School. We worked with the school district and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
We're going to talk because I live on Gilbert Creek. We need an extension of that, but go ahead.
Okay. I love it. Yes. Well, we removed a whole bunch of blackberries. There was some erosion going on here. We removed blackberries, so the non-native species, which the school district was concerned about, and they were concerned about the erosion. And then we went in and planted a bunch of native trees and shrubs. We've been watering for the last couple of years. That was about a $15,000 project, and it was great because we got a bunch of the kids from the high school and the middle school involved in the effort. We got the Middle Rogue Steelheaders helping us with maintaining that parcel. And we could do more work along Gilbert Creek. I totally agree.
Don't leave the building.
Don't leave the building. Okay, I won't go anywhere. I won't go anywhere. Sure, you bet. I will hang out. Simon, you asked earlier about the Oregon Department of Agriculture, Beth Peterzak, and the Inland Rogue Water Quality Management Plan. So the Oregon Department of Agriculture has a program that they call Strategic Implementation Areas. They list specific creeks that they think could really benefit from having watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts help landowners along that creek address their agricultural efforts to improve water quality. Strategic implementation areas, it makes a pot of money available so that we can work with private landowners and get some work done. Wagner Creek was one of those strategic implementation areas. We worked with 8 landowners to do exactly what we did on Gilbert Creek across 12 acres on Wagner Creek. It cost us about $150,000 to do that work. Everything's been planted. We're maintaining the plants now. Associated with that effort, we worked with 19 water users on Wagner Creek that they get their irrigation water from this really old dam called the Beeson-Robeson Dam. It's about 6-foot-high concrete structure that was starting to fail. We worked with those 19 water users which made up the Ditch Association, and essentially rebuilt their dam. They continue to irrigate their properties using gravity-fed irrigation. We just built a dam that looks like a creek. So this is a roughened channel. It allows fish to pass. The 6-foot-high concrete structure didn't allow fish to pass very easily. About 3 miles of habitat were opened up above that. Just a couple weeks ago, we finished a very similar-looking project at 2 diversion dams on Salt Creek, which is out by the city of Eagle Point. Total of those 2 projects, about $250,000. And then, sadly, we did this huge effort up on Sugar Pine Creek last summer. We installed 14 log jams. I don't know, but it probably is. The burn burned right over this project. So next time I talk to you, I'll let you know how many of the log jams survived. We also built a fence. I'm sure the fence is gone. But it was a good effort. A lot of coho rearing habitat happens up on Sugar Pine Creek, which is in Upper Elk Creek. That was about a $100,000 project. We're also doing a whole bunch of planning. We work very closely with the Medford Water Commission in the city of Grants Pass on water quality planning for their treatment facilities, both in terms of protection of their source water and then sort of restoration efforts that might help them with their water quality. We're also working with the Wild Salmon Center to develop what's called a Coho Strategic Action Plan for the region. You can see the other planning efforts we've got going there. These planning efforts really are what's going to fuel our on-the-ground work looking forward for the next 5 or 10 years. These planning efforts will, by and large, become our action plan.
What have been the impacts of the dam removals? I've heard they've just wiped out fish species.
Yeah, that would not be a good characterization from my perspective. It has definitely changed the way that fish are using the river, but particularly on the main stem, Gold Ray Dam and Savage Rapids Dam, we had immediate, the fall following dam removal, Chinook salmon were spawning in the areas that were reservoirs before. And then higher up in the system, we're starting to see, well, every stock of anadromous fish, so those are the fish that, like salmon, that rear in freshwater, go to the ocean to grow big, come back to freshwater to spawn, return to the hatchery 1 to 3, maybe as many as 4 weeks earlier than they did before, which is an indication of the fact that those adult fish are able to move through the system much more quickly. But it's, you know, I think it's going to be, in terms of when we see this, like, was that a successful restoration effort in terms of allowing those fish to make more fish? You're probably looking at 5 generations for us to see that signal.
Of people or five generations of fish?
Which is 25 years.
Okay.
So it's going to be a while before we see that. It is definitely changed.
I know it's certainly clogged up filters and stuff, the water plants.
The amount of sediment coming down, because it was all stored behind those dams, mm-hmm. it was a disaster for the Grants Pass Irrigation District. They built that huge pump system right downstream of where Savage Rapids Dam was, and it's pretty regularly getting inundated by gravel. And that's because the dams aren't stopping that gravel from moving downstream. Of course, that gravel moving downstream also is important for spawning fish. That's what they spawn in. So it's kind of a catch-22. Tough on the district from a maintenance perspective. Probably a good thing for the fish populations in the long run. But I think, you know, I think the jury's out on just how effective that was as a restoration tool. Again, we're probably 20 years away from sort of knowing.
You said 25 years, and they took that dam out 20 years ago. We should be having results now.
Well, they took the dam out 10 years ago, so...
Nah, I question that. It was longer ago than that.
2008.
You took the dam out in 2008?
Savage Rapids was 2008. Because it wasn't that long ago. I was actually, in jet skis on the other side of it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, in 15 years, we ought to have an idea. Last slide is financial. Just to give you a sense of how much money we pulled in. What have I put here? From July of 16 to June of 17, $600,000 of income. We increased that over the last year by about $60,000. Our expenses, on the other hand, went way up. Some of this is just due to the vagaries. You guys understand this. I know that you know, you build a project in June, you get the invoice in July, so there's a little bit of offset in terms of when expenses hit compared to the 12-month period. But that $920,000 is a pretty good indication. Our next fiscal year is probably also going to be around $900,000. So we've increased our spending by a fair amount. And I expect that to hold, if not go up slightly in the coming years.
What is your local funding source for income?
Most of our funding comes from the state, and it's through the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board.
But the orange is local. What's that coming from?
Local is are things like Middle Rogue Steelheaders, Rogue River Fly Fishers, local foundations like the Schwimm Family Foundation.
So the Greens has foundation. So it's not local taxpayer dollars.
Not local taxpayer dollars. However, some of it is probably Jackson Soil and Water Conservation District, which we get pass through grants from the Soil and Water Conservation District. Some of it's also just community members who make donations.
And then that's your newsletter.
And then newsletter, and then an example of one of our friend updates as well, which goes out monthly.
So you guys are really focused on habitat. Do you ever get involved in advocacy elements as far as there's a natural species habitat? The board has endorsed this proposal to restrict the harvest of fish. We were petitioned to take a position on this, and from my perspective, I'm not an expert on it, but it did seem like it would potentially negatively impact the local tourism economy based on harvesting of the native species, and the science that I've heard is the crossbreeding that takes place. It's really hard to
it's a complicated, convoluted issue. Sort
it
of
really
like the,
is.
What's the effect of
that?
We generally don't. We've taken a position on one thing, and that one thing was that the Oregon Board of Forestry applied a change of their rules to positively affect water temperature everywhere in the state except for Southwest Oregon, where they said more research was needed. And we said that the science probably, why would it be different in the Willamette versus the road, where it's actually warmer?
Right. Well, the study hadn't been completed. I testified before ODF&W, and their study was in the middle. Of the 5-year study plan. So all we did was, all I did was petition them to
wait until the study was complete, which is fair.
I didn't, it wasn't really making a position one way or the other. It's just like,
just wait till
you don't need a conclusion until you actually, because we are a little bit different. I know that in the research management plan that the BLM just passed, there's a whole separate section for management of Southwest Oregon because it's of a Mediterranean climate. It's just a little different, but it could be more. So I have also,
and that was kind of our perspective. And the thing we're worried about is that we're working real hard to try to restore forests along streams to benefit, and we're worried that backtracking on that could give a signal to industrial timber to hit
riparian
areas.
They have the riparian setback requirements that are anyhow right now. Yeah. One of the things that I learned when I was on the governor's task force for ONC lands in 2014 is the director of the Nature Conservancy out of D.C., who is on the panel as well, there's not a lot of support for 2-tree-length streamside buffer.
Yeah.
The science after 50 feet is really not, you're bang for the buck of every foot after that.
Right. It's low.
Pretty minimal. So focusing in on the riparian area of the streamside.
Right adjacent to the stream.
Yeah. But managing it to a degree where it's also in Southwest Oregon, where fires have a tendency to go up draws.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
If you put all this stuff and just overload it, whereas it's exactly the opposite of what we used to do in the 70s and 80s, get in there and clean it all out.
I agree with
and
that.
Now we're going to put it all back in. It's like fire's going to clean it up. Middle ground is probably where we need to be. And that's the advocacy that I...
Yep. And I think that's totally fair.
Okay.
Totally fair.
Sounds good.
Okay,
I'm
going
to hang out and talk to you after.
One more question
minutes.
I would have
for
you. A lot of concern we've heard is from the amount of growers in the area using product that runs off into the streams. And we're told it's a DEQ issue, it's an ODFW issue, it's a anybody else's issue, but it's never their issue. It's always somebody else's issue. Is that something that you guys have looked at far as impact?
We have not.
We've heard of some creeks being actually bulldozed over. We've heard of, so it's kind of one of those things.
It's tough. So, again, our gig is voluntarily working with landowners to restore habitat. We don't get as involved in our folks destroying habitat. It's definitely an issue. I think on the same token, water use is an issue with some of the recent land use changes. Mm-hmm. And then the pesticide issue is another one. We haven't really dived into that, and it's mostly just because we don't have the expertise to dive into it. But it's
frustrating. Frustrating from our standpoint that you lean on. I have a rental in an industrial park, and there's a test catch basin at the end of it to say, mm-hmm. anything coming off of that, we're going to nail you for it. And then they test it again at the treatment plant before it enters the Rogue River, so it's pristine. We're going to nail you. And yet we, as commissioners, get the complaints about the cannabis industry. Hey, they're dumping. They've got these big stirring tanks, and heck, they're emanating all kinds of chemicals. Where does that go? Oh, we catch the water. What do you do with it then? Mm-hmm. Nobody asks them that. Oh, we go dump it in the creek.
Right.
We catch the water. Okay, they check the box. You caught the water. Okay, what did you do with it? And we go dump it in the creek. Yeah. And everybody else has to play by the rules. It's like you can't seem to catch the grower, but boy, you've got Ballinger Industrial Park over a barrel, so you're going to let them have it.
Yeah.
So let make everybody else clean it up. The legitimate people clean up their act so that the illegitimate people can just do whatever they want. Yeah. And that's frustrating to us.
I hear you.
Elected officials. So, okay. Any other questions?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Is there a chance that is there a copy of this that I might be able to
take it?
I can have this?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. And was I able to keep this letter that you
have? Absolutely.
Great. Thank you. I'll just hang around.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Public Works Quarterly Update. Rob Brandis, director, is on board with us today.
Where do you have to go by
then? RCC.
Morning.
Morning.
How fast is it?
Yeah, it's the back side, so I'm just kind of...
New chairs.
Yes.
New used chairs.
Due to us.
That's good. Lower form, but morning. So I'll start with the big one. Merlin sidewalks, as you've probably seen, are effectively done. We're down to, I don't know, maybe 20 punch list items. You get the small things, though, like, hey, there's a curb cut here. We got to finish up. Copeland is close. We're already done with the informal parking lot across the way. That was going to be some additional just overflow. We did some preliminary traffic counts, came up with about 8,000 a day average, although we had one tube come loose, so we may take another shot at that in a couple weeks. We're still getting a few calls.
Didn't we have a traffic count before? I mean,
we just wanted to see kind of a before and after, and we had not done one peak season in a while. So
you have a traffic count on who's using the sidewalks?
Yeah, right.
You got one of those bowls?
Yeah, do you have a
put a tube out there, make sure people stomp on the tube when they walk by.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Right. That could work, yeah.
I am still getting feedback from exiting out of...
Little Pantry. Yeah, that's what we're looking at.
Including getting a dash cam video showing perspective of just not being able to see past the cars.
When
I brought up the curbs had already been there, they said, I'm not saying it was. I'm not saying it's because of the sidewalks. I'm just saying you have a concern there.
And there's less people able to park in on-site on OTTs that are parking on the street there. So, yeah, we're looking at putting in some yellow there and a few other places. There actually is some existing yellow, but it's so faint you really have to look to say, oh, gosh, yeah, there it is. But it's a tough angle. I've driven it out a few times intentionally, and you really have to kind of inch out there slowly. I can say the count showed one person doing, I believe it was 94, right past the railroad tracks as you make that last turn heading into town.
Nice.
So throw out the anchor, and it was like 10 a.m. in the morning, so, oh, man.
You're not supposed to do that?
Typically not. I'd say keep it under 80 anyway.
I'm not so sure my car can go
94. 94, not yours. You will get there.
You see some terrifying ones.
Yours is going to be on 94s in the back of a rollback.
Yeah.
Right. we just did one coming down Hillcrest there into town, right, as you go under I-5, and you have somebody pop 97 on that. It's like, so they're running joke around the office. So my speedometer said 100. But yeah, there are some stray
folks. So it was off because you were going faster? Yeah.
Right. There are some stray folks out there that really have the hammer down. So yeah, I may well be coming back to the board looking at a few smaller no parking areas, but we are also able, I believe, to just stripe those yellow and kind of rely on folks observing that, because
I think if
the sheriff has better things to do than write paper.
We can kind of gather data this year, and then when this thing whole calms down, then you can make subtle changes, and I don't think we'll be...
Don't want to make any changes yet. Based on rafting season, it's just another data point, and then we'll hit it again mid-October when things are calmed back down, too.
There is an element that's bigger than just the curve. If you could stripe the perceived parking area, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That would probably go further.
Yeah, I don't know if there's options for doing
that. Say, oh, this is really not,
a yellow hatch box.
Like the T things
out
here that actually show where the car is supposed to park.
Right.
Well,
right.
Yeah, just the
look at some yellow diagonal stripes even or something like that.
Those seem to really work.
Transportation system plan kickoff meeting was held about a month ago. We're on our third teleconference. We're getting ready to advertise, looking for appointees or volunteers for the technical advisory committee. Try to get a fairly broad group of that. We've got a few automatic plug-ins. You know, we'll get somebody off the rural land development community. Hopefully, get somebody from RV Act. Get somebody off the bikeways committee. Those kinds of things. But it's nice to have a few folks that just kind of pop out of the woodwork and
what
say,
"Yeah." Kickoff meeting entail.
That's just a matter of, as much as anything, kind of meeting Kittleson and their subs and saying, here's our process, here's the areas we want to focus on, and then kind of almost a roundtable discussion of where are some areas that the county has concerns about that we want to focus on.
Were you there?
No.
Why not? I don't understand this. I would have liked to have been there. I mean,
it would have been a real good opportunity for the commuter lane.
Well, I mean, not just that. It's everything. It's comprehensive, everything. And I think the ability of the board to, from our liaison standpoint at least, just to be at the table, understand the process, be able to relay that to us, because I don't know the process.
I think we tried to. You had a conflict that day.
Okay.
But as it goes on, obviously, there'll be monthly, if not quarterly, updates with you
don't
guys.
Don't want to be in the dark on this one. I'd love to know the process about it. I've never done one.
Be careful what you wish for.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
But I'm not normal. Maybe the other board members are not interested in knowing those kinds of things. But there's nothing that I don't want to know.
Sure.
And I would love to know how.
Would it be helpful for the board to see kind of the current list of saying, here's the 10 or 20 biggest hot spots?
What's the process?
Yeah. And obviously
the process, what the hot spots were that came in. Maybe just a product of that meeting would be great.
Sure. Yeah, we can get you in this all together. The other bigger piece we try to catch as the TSP moves forward, and there's not a got to do it by now, but it's just to anything that could be a possible project, let's get it in there just so it's documented. So later on, if you go to apply for a grant, you say, yeah, no, there it is. We've been talking about fixing
it. It has to be out on the ground floor of the
TSP. If didn't make it in this,
yep.
I will want to start over.
Exactly, yeah. So that
will be like an do not pass go.
Yep.
What we just did with JJ this morning, I don't care about your timeline. We're going back because we missed the boat somehow.
Yeah.
And that doesn't feel good.
Right. No, so for the three of you, if there's a spot that you know you've gotten, and I think you forward most of them, but if there's a spot you know you've gotten five calls on this year, let me know, and we will work it in there. There's got to be, we got to do's, we hope to do's, we might do's, and we'll get it on one of those lists, at least so
but
it's
if
documented.
It's like anything else, if it's not in there,
it makes funding a lot harder.
You can't, it's really tough to go back later on and say, oh, we decided this became a problem.
We do not want to amend this plan.
No.
This is not like amending. So the RLDC is tough. Amending a TSP is...
I'd rather heavily front-load than not. You know, just let your imagination race with you.
The Glees Flat Project moving forward on schedule for kickoff this fall. We've got a couple last kind of letters of agreement to sign with them, but that's moving along.
What is that? I'm sorry.
For the guardrail project.
That's the guardrails and turnouts.
Yeah, it looks like we are still going to have to take down the weigh station. I was looking like we may avoid that for a few.
Did you find out who offloaded that tract? I don't want to call it a dozer because it could have been.
I don't know if they found anything on it. I forwarded it on to operations. They were going to do some digging to see who went across.
Because the farther it goes, the less likely we're to find out who, you know, now three people have gone up there. Who are you going to cite? But at that time, it was one set
of tracks. Right, yeah, I forwarded back to them that day. I've not circled back to see if they did, but we'll double check on it. The chip sealing is about done. We're probably 90% done. If the fire lets up, we've got a few we had to leave in the Robertson Bridge area for obvious reasons. If we can't get back in, we're 100% done. We did move and catch a couple other roads that were planned for next year just because we did come up short. I think we had about 5 miles we couldn't get to because of fire closures, so we picked up about 2 miles elsewhere, but we do still have enough bucks left in there that if things can calm down.
Did you follow up on that deal? I was noticing on Facebook about a motorcyclist that slipped on some gravel in the New Hope Road area.
We've actually got a tort claim notice, so there's going to be some other things going on. I don't know that it was related to chips or anything else. There wasn't a whole lot of context. It just said motorcycle accident due to gravel on roads. So
we'll have to talk about that at legal session.
Yeah. And we've only seen the notice. We've not seen the tort yet.
Okay.
Any update on Old Stage? Had you been out there yet? South Old Stage?
Old Stage was, help me, Thompson Creek I dealt with the other day.
I had emailed you about a complaint about South Old Stage right near the rock and soil place that they said the erosion has gotten so bad.
It's, right in front of rock and soil there, We went and took a look. We have not done anything with the EPA. It's right in front of the rock and soil. as we kind of expected it would be once that place opened.
Is there an element to making commercial operations even approach? ODOT used to do that on their highways. It was really funny growing up. My dad put in our driveway. He was mandated to pave our approach. Mm-hmm. No one else between Caves Highway and our 5 miles has a paved approach at that point. It was like, how, you know, it's a good idea, and it's got a slope away from the road so people's stuff isn't draining, you know. Can we do that?
Even well,
that's on a zone of commercial.
Sure, no, it's part of our approach process and all that. They would have to pave that approach. It's just we don't have a function for capturing areas that just hammer a road. So, you know, out in front of Copeland, out in front of Robco, all these places wear out quicker. We don't have a function to say
we could have potentially. An ordinance that requires commercial operations to pave approaches and maintain them.
Potentially, right, right.
Yeah. I don't have any problem with that, and we I think they would probably understand and respect that.
We could take a look to see what's being done elsewhere. I mean, you're going to get some pushback in terms of, you know, why are you singling our industry out? But yeah, you can make the same argument.
Because everything you do is heavy. Yeah. Yep. Everything you roll onto our asphalt, our system is designed for the least for everybody. Yep. It's not designed for, you know, 100,000-pound vehicles because they're low boys. They're excessive.
We would somehow work it into the code in terms of trips per day and average gross vehicle weight or something like that. Because then you're talking about, you know, both haulers, the school districts, these kind of places that all have a similar thing. Yeah, I'll do a look around the state though and see if there's comparable legislation written into a code.
I think it makes sense.
Safe Routes to School is moving forward. I'm going to be doing a presentation at next week's Bikeways Committee. The District 7 is focusing on Lincoln Elementary, so that's going to look at some potential upgrades for Beacon, which we're conveniently working on. And then they're also looking at Hillcrest and the top end of 10th. And it's not going to be, hey, let's go put in 2 miles of curb gutter sidewalk, but it's kind of a matter of what are some smaller fixes we can do as this moves on down the road.
Shoring up intersections.
Yep. Commissioner Lovelace is very interested in this one. Like I say, D7's got a lot invested to it, and we're going to have Eric Hesek, who will be our primary kind of coordinator for within our office. But
counselor.
Yeah. What did I say, Commissioner? Counselor Lovelace.
And then in the Illinois Valley, I know that Evergreen Elementary has, there's a section that isn't finished from on Riverside, West Riverside, East Riverside, West, that would be, I don't think it's far, you know, just some little stuff to fill in.
River Street is their number one. Last we talked to them, I actually pinged them today to see if they had any changes. But the last I heard, because, you can catch that, plus Lonerburn, plus the high school. And they're probably into this more than D7 at this point. They have been kind of waiting for something to happen. So, no, Dave Valenzuela and Casey Alderson are both all over it.
Anything the board can do to help out.
Sure.
Project,
no, and it's
we
good.
We are very, very into that project. That's been decades.
And
nice to go where we're appreciated.
Right. and there could be some timing with Roger Brandt's project out there where he's trying to build that connecting trail that catches some other stuff. So, you can maybe leverage this and say, hey, look, we're doing a lot of things. Jenna Marmon has been tempering us all along. It just says this first go-around, there's a lot of money available, but there's also a 20-year backlog of projects. So, I'm not going to be overly optimistic, but I think especially River Street seems like a strong candidate to get some funding. So that would be cool. A lot of the work falls in the school districts because they got to have the PTAs involved and everybody else to kind of, they call it their action group, I believe is the term. And they've got a lot of hoops they have to jump through to say, here's how many students it serves, here's why it's important, that sort of thing. But, they're both ready to go, it sounds like.
If they need some schooling on that as to how to put pressure on it, is that something your office does?
Jenna Marmon will probably be the best. That's ODOT. Okay. She's the bike gal, and she's done a lot of these over there, so she's pretty good at kind of saying, don't waste your time on that, put your effort
in. Right. I think they need some navigation through that to maximize their effort.
Yep. And we've all, I think Eric's gone to 2 or 3 seminars at this point now, so we're kind of, everybody's drinking out of a fire hose to get geared up for the new offer.
I think what we need to do is be that conduit to make sure that, you know, it's probably ODOT's last place to look is the Illinois Valley.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they've done a lot for downtown Cave Junction, which they have, but that doesn't necessarily help school kids. It's like, well, we've done that, now we're good to go.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a good start.
It's a great start.
Out there. Now let's carry on and
yeah.
They're big. Jenna's
to Jenna's credit, she is very has a very neutral eye, and she's just looking for bikeway, walkway money anywhere, anyhow she can get
great.
It. Yeah, no, yeah. She is a really good advocate for that stuff. She's kind of like the Sarah Rubio.
Well, that one feels really money. Like round hole, round peg for safe routes, because there are patchworks of sidewalks getting to it, and it isn't just this conduit, and all of the schools are basically on River Street.
Yep, catch them all.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, you don't almost get better than that if you.
No, I'm cautiously optimistic. It seems like a strong.
Let's see
strong
if we can budget. Help them navigate Excellent. That. I think that'd be a good,
yeah.
good thing.
On the fleet side, so we've got the last five of Dave's Tahoes are on order. Those are continuing to run about 37,000 a vehicle and 17 for the upfitting, which is about what we budgeted, right around 55. They're turning around as quick as they can up north. They'll go to Wireworks and get upfitted and come on down here. Still looking at getting vehicles, hopefully for building safety, facilities, and then the two for public health. He's looking to add just a couple of commuter cars for smaller in-town stuff.
What does facilities mean?
They are down one of the vans for the guys. It's like a 91, and they just hammer those things. They get to about 80,000 miles, and it's over 18 years, and just
it's freeway. It's
heavy, it's just heavy, crappy, hard work, and they're overloaded with weight, so it's just, that's about as good as we ever do. County fleet last quarter, Ted ran it. We were up to a 75% wrench rate, which was very cool.
That was amazing.
Yeah, we got a new guy in on the public works side. He's been fantastic. He actually has a bit of bus experience, so we're going to be maybe pulling his knowledge to the other side as well. But things are kind of dialed in and running pretty smooth now. So, and hopefully with the SEIU contract, we're going to be able to get that last mechanic spot filled on the county fleet side after we had the first four guys turn it down.
Right.
They said, can't take the $700 a month pay cut or whatever it would have been. So we're circling back, we'll call them as soon as it opens up and see if we get one.
I needed a fleet vehicle 2 weeks ago. Said we have some, but they were all down for mechanical issues. The 75% sounds good. It's not a big deal that I couldn't grab a car, but we need something in the fleet to afford programs that don't need something all the time, but
right.
four times a year or whatever. And it isn't conducive to go rent a car. There weren't any. There were none practically in Grants Pass, but a really nice town car over at the place on F Street or whatever for $90.
With Enterprise? Because Enterprise has been pretty
Enterprise
solid.
Enterprise didn't have any.
Interesting.
They were empty.
They were all out.
Oh, okay.
So it's something that, if we had that floater vehicle that programs could access kind of at the drop of a hat would be really positive.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to suggest is that you two work with the sheriff. Something that I'm hearing in the community that would be really positive to do the 90 mile an hour things is to have a couple of retired police vehicles. And I know everybody's got reservations about this. I really don't care what the reservations are. I don't want to hear no. I want to hear figure out a way to make it work where you're throwing a car out occasionally around different sections of the county. Find somebody who's receptive to being a curator of it. Like in O'Brien, where they have that to slow people down.
Still
up
works.
In Merlin. It still does. That old 50.
Yeah, I see people. I come over the hill and they see that black and white, they lock them up. And it's a 54 Ford, I think it is, or something like that.
We
tried it. We did that out on New Hope.
Yep.
At one trouble corner we had out there. Gosh, it was the transmission was out on it, but we parked it out there alongside it. Boy, it just.
You can find somebody in the neighborhood who's willing to take it in, put it out, no big deal. Mm-hmm. I would do it in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
But there isn't really a spot that would.
Yeah, we can work with Dave and get
something
going.
I just feel like that's.
Yeah.
It's practical. It's free.
It's cheap. It's cheap for sure, yeah. Hopefully get one that will actually turn over and drive every month. And not towing it, that definitely changes the metrics a bit. Yeah.
It's got to work.
Two gears reversed and one gear forward, but we'll get there.
And on Enterprise, that's good to know because really we've got the state contract with them, so if they're not able to provide an appropriate level of service, then they need to know about it and changes
made. I
don't
know if it was like an anomaly or if that's a regular thing. We might just try to call from time to time in this office and say, need a car today.
Yeah,
you guys got
I don't think it matters which one. I think they're all interconnected.
Yeah,
well,
they were going to pull one from Medford.
Weird, yeah, because I've run it out there before. And they usually have 30 cars in the lot. Huh.
I've seen them usually.
A friend of mine used to own Budget, and they had Redding, you named it. And you need a car, they went and got it. They had Bend, Redding, Medford.
It isn't cost effective for one day. They'll tell you no.
Mm-hmm.
I can't run.
Yeah. Okay. When you get rid of your vehicles, like your the ones you're cycling out, do those go on auction?
Yeah.
Okay.
A couple quick last ones. Three large culverts that you guys saw moving forward. Pre-con meetings will be coming up here in the next week or so. Sand Creek, we've got the 100% plans in place. We're reviewing them, but there's nothing too exciting on that. It looks like it'll be moving forward. And then the last one was the Southwest Slip Lane. You're a bit up to speed on that, but Art called me back late yesterday. I haven't pinged him yet, but we've got some rough numbers that we had Kittleson throw on that project. They were coming back with about $3 million each way. I would put a huge asterisk next to that only because the signals is the big unknown. If they get into having to move them or new signal poles, you start adding hundreds of thousands quickly, potentially. But $3 million each direction is not at all scary to me. And
that's not bad.
Art's message, he didn't say, oh, my gosh, what are you talking about?
Six is half. That's 45% of what they came out at 12.5.
Yeah, so I mean, like I say, I'd put a big asterisk on that, but that's not an impossible number. And if the city's bringing over $950,000 and I'm still committing the county to what we would have put on Allen Creek, yeah, we start seeing about halfway there for one direction, which would be a good mm-hmm. start. So
that's good. So buy-in.
So what I understand is that it is 950. They spent 150 or 250. The city understands they're going to have to come up with part of that engineering.
Right.
But the city, in my conversations, has been looking to, you know, tap into part of it. And the justification for doing that is that that isn't money that will go away necessarily. I think that's a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
Because every time you start a new project, there are different regulations, everything. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't happen with next year, the engineering is old and they're going to have to start from scratch. Mm-hmm. And that money isn't going to be well spent on a project. Right. It's, you know, don't worry about it. We've already engineered. No.
Nope.
They go back out and they redo it.
Yeah.
Well, because the traffic council changed, you know, so.
And in some ways, that couple hundred thousand is one pocket to the other for the city, too. So if ODOT says you got to repay that to get that balance back up to 950, and they turn around and say, here's 950 for a different project, yeah, you've given them 200, you get it right.
You get it back.
Yeah, but yeah, the net four that they get is...
Which might be the cleaner way to do it for the public, because... Yeah.
But yes, the city, to your point, the city does not necessarily have the first 950,000 paid for. It's probably more like 750 or something. Yep, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm going to call her back today, and if I get some, we'll get some more news and keep that thing moving along.
Good.
That Ringhead intersection is the one that's going to be the challenge, right?
Yeah, and I don't know how with the standards, if all of a sudden you got to add, you know, if can you slide the lights down further to the end of the standard, or if you extend the standard by 10 feet, you now have to get a new upright. That's where I wouldn't even want to guess, because those stupid things are $250,000 a stick new, and it gets really scary in a hurry. So. But yeah,
well,
$3 million is a lot better than $6 million each way.
I'm happier with the $6 million number than I am with no, it's $12 million. So we're not interested.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does.
I'm happy that we
changed that intersection significantly. If you reduce the ability, I don't know if it does. Are there any drawings associated with this that we can review and say, you know, I've seen, and they'll design it the way it is in their mind, and you're like, no, that's not what I meant. I meant
right.
you to just.
Should we be submitting what we would like to see out there, and then they take that?
Well, I just
so we're not, so we're not
they,
back and forth.
What they scoped, what they got to the 6.5. We don't want them starting the third.
I don't want to do another. I don't want to do another Allen Creek Road.
No, no. Tony's basic assumption was
nobody listened across the parking lot.
Right.
Nobody
right.
listened to what the council was saying,
and they wasted
about
a
lane
bunch
shifts
of money.
And so on
right.
and so forth. Even the engineers, and they bring it back, and they got the whole thing. I said, just because you made it the whole wall, do you think that I don't see there's no jog in it like we ask you? Why did you do that?
Right.
Waste of time, waste of money. I want what our vision is perfectly clear going in. Then the engineer, I want to know how he's going to get it done rather than how he's not going to
right.
get it done. I'm
right.
not interested in not how it's
right.
going to get
if
done.
If there's anything to review, that would be ideal.
Yeah.
It sounds
right.
like there's got to be something, even if it's with crayon, to get this.
This was, yeah, this was a very quick back of the napkin to say, The first priority being, let's keep it within the right of way to minimize cost, obviously.
Yeah,
and so then, we didn't get out there with a tape measure and say, hey, we've got to shove it in 5 feet from the middle here. It's kind of assuming, here's the existing fog line, get it inside of
it. Well, it would be tough to go back to Colvin and the Dutch brothers and everybody and say, thank you for moving your store back. We need another 15
right.
feet.
Right.
I'm not going to go there.
No.
Deal breaker. I'm not going to go there, especially when you've got that big deal
middle.
In the middle.
Right.
It's just,
we can...
Right.
Get scorched on what we have.
Right. I think our hope for the first cut was to get this plus or minus a million or two on the bigger projects. You can walk into RV Act and not just say, we got this cool idea. It's more a matter of kind of, here's some big moving pieces. Here's how we think we can patchwork together the funding.
Yeah. With something we already have.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Okay. Cool.
And at some point in time, I need to talk to you about Applegate, the storage yard out there on New Hope Road. We'll just have an idle conversation.
Oh, I don't want to steal Julie's thunder. Are you talking about solid waste?
Me? I'm not. No. Go ahead.
Okay, just a quick update. So then Solid Waste Agency is third Tuesday of the month, and that's where they're going to do the presentation for getting the program established over there with public health. So that's pretty cool. That'd be a big step forward if we can get that thing funded. To have like an additional code enforcement person that's actually going out there and saying, hey, contractor liens, fix it, clean it up, or we're going to fix it for you, and using agency money to fund
the
program.
Is the agency still funding the recycle project? Because I just am hesitant to...
Which recycle project?
Well,
the $900,000 for the... At this point, it's still there on the books. Southern Oregon Sanitation has not moved anything on it at this point.
I would rather hold off because we don't necessarily know what the market's going to look like.
Yeah, and I think that's why they've pumped the brakes at this point.
When they did it, that was great, but I'd like something kind of in writing. That
right.
They have to resubmit.
Right.
That $900,000 is in the queue,
yeah.
But I want to know exactly what it is that they're applying for and in designing.
Yep.
That it meets the, you can appreciate that investment. The worst thing to do is invest $1 million and then it just sit there because there's no market or what we have.
There's only four items, yeah.
Producing.
Well, good discussion. So Trent's coming in this week, I think, isn't it, Wendy?
14th.
Okay, next Tuesday. So yeah, for the presentation on the recycle rate. So yeah,
great.
Make a mental note to hit it there too.
One other thing else, but out of Pleasant Valley Road out in Merlin, there was a real mess on the corner just as you turn onto Pleasant Valley and you go by Matt Morris's boat shop, and then on the left-hand side, it was right on the corner. We got numerous complaints about it, and it was a travel trailer that burned down.
The Monument End or the Monument End?
No, on the Merlin End.
On the in town?
Oh, it wasn't in town. It was out of town.
Tavis?
What is it?
Was it Tavis?
Tavis. Corner of Tavis and Pleasant View at Pleasant Valley. And I went by there the other day. It's that lot's clean.
Oh.
Did we clean that up?
We did, yeah.
Okay, well, if we do something like that, I think we need to brag about it a little bit. We need a list of things that we've done, like, for instance, Twilight, Tavis, Camp Joy Road, to let people know that there is some movement forward on these things, and that we are, you know, we're responding.
And put a contractor's lien on that property.
And even if we convince the landowner to take care of it, it was us that convinced the landowner. We need to take credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important at this stage of the game,
mm-hmm.
to show that we're actually making movement. You know, where we were just throwing our hands in the air,
right.
We're not doing that anymore.
Right.
And I think the more we can publicize that, the more that's going to send the message to people with these compounds that we're on the way.
Something will happen.
You can see the dust, and the cavalry's coming. So
absolutely.
I think that's a good idea. So
yeah.
Thank you.
One good clean.
It looked good. It looked good. I drove by. Whoa, it's a nice lot. So thank you.
Okay.
Anything else for Mr. Brown?
No, I think that's great.
What was the mental note you're going to come back on? Applegate.
Applegate, yes. And just nothing earth rattling on. I just,
yep.
I did a walkthrough.
It'll ping me so I remember when you go.
I'm checking the boxes.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Something I was thinking about, Rob, was our chip seal program.
Yes.
I don't understand. I'm not familiar with what we did this year, what you substituted, and what you have planned for next year.
Sure.
I know you have a plan for this because you've got a rating for all the roads.
Yeah.
Is there a way to put that down on a map?
Like, as I say, get a map of what we did.
I can have a mental note about, you know, this is what we've done, this is what's in the queue this year, and this is what we're planning on next year.
Yeah, we typically don't GIS map, but we certainly could, yeah. It's
I don't think it would, I mean, I don't care if it's a crayon,
yeah.
A highlighter.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you want to see the year that's already just happened then?
The whole thing.
Next year's
like
yeah,
last year's, this year's,
map,
where
yeah.
you're going. I think that would be
it's
a help.
It's basically grouped by district.
Do you have
a visual
sure.
dealio?
Do you have a criteria that you can get to as people say, well, I don't know why they did my section of road. It's perfectly good. If you have a criteria, just say, this is what we're looking
for. Six
rate
ranks
you
based
guys,
on width and condition of pavement,
okay.
ADT,
all right.
and all those kinds of things.
When it was
that'd
done
be helpful.
Last. And
yeah.
I guess
just to answer questions.
That would be very helpful.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, moving on to item number 5, Community Development Quarterly Update. Julie Smeltzer, director, is here.
Okay, I'm going to go through some minor things, or I shouldn't say minor things, but just some updates real quick on where we're doing things. So I heard Rob talking about the trails. So we, about a year and a half ago, started a project with Williams to do a trail out in Williams. and the planner that I had assigned to that decided she couldn't handle the project. So I've asked RV Cog to step in and take care of that project. So they're throwing that around, and they're supposed to get back to me. I ask them about once a week whether or not they're doing it, but they haven't made up their mind yet. But that's a Safe Routes to School program. We already started them on the process of doing the surveying. But
that might be something they can move on to right when they're done with the food and friends. They just need another something to go to.
Yeah, I think it's a different part of RV Cog, but yeah. I did finish the grant that I was working on, the EDA one, which would be $450,000 for a feasibility study for co-location. Keep in mind that if we get these grants, that they pay 80% and we pay 20%. That also included money for the fairgrounds and to do some work at the sheriff's substation. So we'll see what happens with those. Our online permitting, it's been going about a month now. We haven't opened it up to the public yet because we're still working out the kinks in there. But we've found some good data as we go through that process. Hopefully, we're able to open that up to the public in a month or so. Right now, we're just kind of trying to find the bugs in it yet, because there are some bugs that are in the system yet. Just a friendly nag about the industrial park sewer that Three Rivers School District has said that they're not going to allow any more hookups to their sewer system. So we recently had a business that's trying to expand and got the no from Three Rivers, which means he can't expand his business. So we're working with Three Rivers right now saying, hey, Dutch Bros, reduced by this many people, can you let this many people in the sewer? But it's really, we're to the point where we need our sewer system out there. As you know, we were talking about our 10 acres out there, our 9.88, and what we're going to do with it. We did meet with the neighbor, and we're talking about swapping the direction of the properties. I think you might have talked about that in an executive session. I'm not sure.
Why are we talking about it here?
Because just to let you know that if we do go ahead and try and sell that property, we're not going to be able to sell it until we have sewer access. So even though we're going through all this work, we might have some issues with still trying to market that property.
It's just a process. It's been going on for 20 years, and it doesn't mean that we won't do that.
I know, but it's from trying to attract business, that's my only...
We get it. What are we supposed to do?
I'm just saying we need to keep on
that project. We're waiting on DEQ. If you have a contact there with Regional Solutions, that's something we should be working on. And I haven't heard a lot of progress. Where all of Southern Oregon is waiting on a DEQ inspector to review the perk test that we have back from the Galley Group. That's done. I mean, we've done our thing. It's in the queue. So I get your frustration.
Yeah.
Work through the things that you can and don't stress about the things you don't control. Anytime you have a challenge with Three Rivers and not being able to do that, I don't know how long this has been going on, but don't come at the last minute and say, I've got this problem. I should have known about it 3 weeks ago. I should have sat down with Dave Vanisvola, and brought in his mom, if I have to tell you, you know, let's do the math on this. You used to put in 8,000 gallons a day. Dutch Bros headquarters has moved. That's reduced it by 1,500, whatever it takes, and say, you've got capacity in here. In fact, you need an infusion on a daily basis to distribute, dilute the stuff.
We got a letter from the Three Rivers School District late last week, I think it was on a Thursday.
Perfect.
And that's what I'm bringing to your attention, that we're maxed out. We're not going to be able to bring in any more industry.
Then let's sit down with them, like, tomorrow.
And that's why I've asked for updates on the sewer system, because...
Are you on the Friday call?
No, as a matter of fact, I haven't been part of the sewer planning group since the second interview. I was completely dropped off of that.
I have not either.
So,
I just got added. You'll be added to it.
Okay.
But there's a Friday call at 9 a.m. that really is an update, and we've been basically waiting on that DEQ, the perk tests, and the element to move forward.
Yeah, because when I don't know what's going on with it, I can't counsel the businesses that are looking.
The challenge is that, frankly, it's... I'm not going to point fingers, but there hasn't been a county point person that's really been bringing it all together, and the facilitator isn't really doing that either.
Are you still okay?
Right. So we'll work that through.
Okay. I'm glad that Brian's here, because this spring I had a meeting with the Watershed Council and the Soil and Water Conservation Districts to see if there was a way we could work together on basically watershed planning. In our department, we saw a lot of Last year, there was a lot of flooding, which brought down a lot of granitic soils and did a lot of flooding and damage. We had bridges go out and culverts go out on private property. So we actually met to see if there was a way we could start working together better. We just had an educational session with the realtors last week, as a matter of fact, where we had, it was the Soil and Water Conservation District, and we had DEQ there, and Department of Ag, and myself, and we had James there talking about flooding, on ways that we can work together to prevent some of this runoff that we're seeing through public education. So
I've got a, I'll get your her name. I have a lady, young lady, that I was out and visited her place out off of Clover Lawn, and she has that, an issue just with that.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if she's ever contacted you, but I'll get you her name so that maybe you two can touch base. And
yeah, there has to be a way to make it better. It's some of the housing amendments we're doing about looking at the granitic soils will help, and by requiring, like, silt fences and stuff will help. But it's, this past year, there was just a lot of damage that, and a lot of finger-pointing. You know, was it Public Works? Was it upstream? Was it the irrigation district? So we're finally trying to work together as to address those issues now. For Merlin, the next on the project is we had visioning sessions in spring, as you know, and we talked about lights and signage. So I'll be beginning to work with them on that again to see, you know, what do they want? Can we get grants? Do that whole process. We've been borrowing Mark in our office out to GIS for the fires. Bob Noyes has needs assistance out there, so we've been taking Mark off his projects and putting them in over at the command center to help with the GIS. I think Mark, it sounds like that's slowing down a little bit, so he'll be able to be back
in
the office.
I haven't seen him out there the three or four times I've been out there, so.
Yeah, he started going out there for the last 2 weeks, I think it was. John had called me and said, Julie, is there any way that you can help? And so we did. We took Mark off. Mark has, his load is pretty low right now.
Okay.
So we took him out and put him at, there to help Bob. So
Bob's just been stellar out there. Very, very accommodating. We get updates all the time. And
that's awesome.
It come, all comes out of his machine, so that, we like that.
Yeah, I know Mark was in the office yesterday, so hopefully he's, hopefully it slowed down a little that Bob doesn't need the help. Long time ago, we had talked about Welcome to Oregon signs, and I reached out to the gentleman who did the big one on I-5 and found out what that cost. It was crazy. So I asked him if he's able to design a smaller version of that Welcome to Oregon sign and to give me a bid of what it would be and what it would be if we could have multiple ones. The idea to hopefully sell that idea to Travel Oregon to put them in all 14 entrances to the state, but and to make our to get ours paid for, obviously.
Yeah,
the only one that we're affected is coming in from Crescent City, right?
Yes.
Like, what did it cost?
If I remember right, I want to say it was like $4.5 million or something like that. It was crazy because what they did was they made all of the molds for it. That's all concrete. It looks like rock, but it's not. And then when they installed it, they accidentally destroyed them. So he was the man who designed
it. Sounds like a state project.
Yes. That's why I want to get the bid and see what it what would it be for multiple ones. Tell me what it is for one, but then what if we would do all of them and then present it to the state?
Are
that
you working with ODOT on this? Or, I mean,
we
it's
have,
their responsibility to present that. I mean,
No, they said no. So I've had
that,
Brad Neva. And
who did that one down there?
That was an ODOT project, yes, but ODOT referred. So I had a conversation, Brad Neva, myself, and ODOT had a conference call, and ODOT said that it was basically up to us to get to find the funding on that. That's not an ODOT funded. They may have done that
is.
One because it's an interstate, but they
no,
said
it's
they
everywhere.
Would,
it, ODOT does the bridges. They do the entrance signs. So I don't know who you met with at ODOT.
Well, Art from ODOT.
I'll have a conversation with
yeah,
Matthew
told
Garrett
us that they would not be funding
week.
That.
Yeah. And I don't see how that's possible because who else's responsibility?
Well,
is
now help me out here. The sign front. Do you want one sign to be at all 18 entrances to Oregon?
Yeah, I just you know.
Or are they going to be? I mean, I can see you're coming in on Highway 20 or whatever that is over there around Napa or whatever it is, and you have a high desert look to that sign, and up in Wallowa, you have a high desert look. that's not going to look real good down there at the entrance coming into Oregon, which is the Pacific Northwest logging type round rock rather than lava rock and so on and so forth for the base. So I don't know how you can do just one size fits all.
I think what she was trying to do is get it one size fits all so that it gets paid for by everybody.
And
I get that, but at the same time, if you're being told by Art it's our deal, then give us the square footage and we'll do it, but don't tell us what it's going to look like. Don't, you know, you say it's going to be 5
by
8.
We buy, we do it our way.
We're
going to do it our way.
Travel Oregon did fund a lot of that one, so that's why I was thinking that if I had a package, I could go to Travel Oregon and say, look, here's 14 signs, 2 designs, 3 designs, same design.
You got to get your foot in the door somewhere. Yeah.
So, and then Rob had just talked about how we are still seeking funding for the garbage person that would go between public health and community development.
I'm sure we have a better title for it than garbage person because that's not our business.
Okay, so I just want to share my actual report.
Great.
This is for Wendy.
I know that you're working on that trails program as it relates to safe routes to schools. But if there's a trail program in Josephine County that makes sense for us to be working on, it's with the guy from the Illinois Valley that wants to connect the Pacific Crest Trail with the Oregon Coastal Trail. There's 8 miles left. If you spend 5 minutes on any trail, whatever it takes to get that done, it's the only point of connection between Canada and Mexico, and it's right here in Josephine County, and it's just 8 miles left. I'd almost be willing to, you know, bond something like that over a couple of years and just say, just go do it.
Mm, okay.
Have you talked to, what's his name? His name was mentioned in the trail program in the Illinois Valley.
I'll ask Kate.
Kate will know.
Okay, so I just wanted to give you an update on some stuff. So the board had suggested we do a survey. So we did a survey for a month.
Survey for what?
Customer service survey.
Oh, great.
The board had asked me to do that the last time I talked to them. So we did the customer service survey for exactly 1 month. We only had 15 responses. But
how many contacts did you have to get 15 responses?
So
did you have 200 people you serviced and served and get 15 back?
Well, our monthly, we had, I think, 461 customer contacts this month. So that does include phone calls, though. But so based on that, we had 15 people fill it out. We had the survey sitting in the center of the building safety desk and the center of the planning desk.
Okay.
And so that's what we had. And bottom line is when I go through it, there was really only one complaint, and it was about the what's on the website, the forms that are out there. As we know, we're going to the e-permitting system, and the county is looking at possibly updating the website, so I think those will be addressed. The only other suggestion was we serve coffee and donuts. But bottom line is, if you go to the bottom line was that we process quicker than the public expects. The computer online complaint has been addressed through the SmartGov system. One of the complaints was that the new inspector is too thorough. I view that as a good thing, not a bad thing. There's still a small disconnect on processing some applications where it's taking longer in one part of the department than the other, so we're working on some of that stuff. We were asked to increase our office hours because we're open from 8 to noon, and then we do the paperwork in the afternoon. We did increase our hours from 4 days to 5 days a week since I've been here, so I don't know about increasing staying open all afternoon because it is difficult to get the work done then.
Well,
we
I think
do,
you may be compromising the way you're getting stuff done is because you have time that you're closed to do your paperwork.
That's what we are, yeah.
If you're continuing this flow at the front counter, you don't have time to process the work you brought in the morning.
That's exactly right.
I would be cautious with that.
But we do have hours available by appointment. We even meet people on Saturdays. So so I'm not willing to actually extend those hours at this point.
Okay. All right.
And then just in addition to the survey, we had received a really nice card. So those survey responses are here if board members want to look at them. Otherwise, they are all summarized in there.
There are a number of points that come into me that that are challenging, and I don't refer all of them to you. Some I just have faith that they're going to kind of work out.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are really challenging, like the last one, setting up accurate expectations. Like I've read the stuff that he says, I get it on Monday or Friday, and then it doesn't happen. And that's, if I'm going to call somebody back, I got to call them back. If they're going to get the permit on Friday, they better get the permit on Friday or really understand why it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I think you're going to work on with Mark. Because it can be a negative to try to do it so fast or whatever that it doesn't actually work out that way. And then, you know, people taking off time to come there with an expectation like something's going to happen, and then for whatever reason it doesn't, that's like waiting in the doctor's office for an hour for an appointment first thing Monday morning. How do you get behind first thing Monday morning? I don't understand that. I mean, so it's meeting those expectations and setting them out accurately is important.
Just moving on. These are going to be new reports that you see coming from SmartGov. Where I have the pens through, that means those things aren't working yet. For instance, when you look at this, it'll say conditional use, and if you slide over, it says that it was processed the same day. We know that's not true because by state law, it takes longer than that. So we have to figure out a way to work that. But basically what we're finding is it takes about 3 days to process a development permit. And, of course, we compare that to our neighbor all the time, and we're pretty proud of the fact that we're kicking them out so quick. So even our survey showed that people were getting their product in less time than they expected.
Well, on your survey responses, usually if somebody's got it, they'll use that survey for negative rather than positive. And if you didn't get a bunch of negative off of your surveys, that's a plus. That tells me that people are even if they didn't do the survey, if they saw the survey, they said, you know what, I'm going to let you know. I'm going to fill one of these out.
Every survey in here was good. If they had a negative comment, the survey was also by stuff like very, very good, excellent work. I just suggest that you improve your computer, you know, so they were good.
Right.
And we asked them to put them anonymously in the Dropbox so they didn't have to be face-to-face with somebody or think somebody was going to read it as soon as they turned it in. So I was happy with it. So, okay, just moving on. So you'll see these two pages. The board asked that the building safety departments start doing theirs similar to planning, so they did. The only difference is planning goes by a fiscal year, building safety goes on a calendar year, so it gets a little confusing when you look at them. But from the planning side, we are just a little below average for this first month for July. As you can see, last year we took in 34,000. This year we did 27. And of course, building safety is a little above the average. And then just more, I guess, for you to look at on your own.
Or are there anything that we should be made aware of with these fiscal...
That we are behind compared to last year.
That doesn't matter.
That's our big thing. But other than that, there's nothing really alarming in there since the last time we talked.
Well, your June revenues at the end of last year are the lowest they've ever been in previous years. I'm not looking at month to month. I'm looking at averages. So you ended the year above, but is there what happened in June? Do you know?
So, yeah, and basically we believe it's marijuana. So, and we saw that from last year, when the board put in that order, all once we saw everything slipping down, where people stopped investing like they did the year before. What we're going to end up doing is, I think we're just going to be coming back to our normal or our average processes. But right now, I think that still has had an impact on our revenue.
So how are you planning on that? That is something, that's the point of this. So if you go back to 12-13, and your averages were somewhere around 300,000. And so you're going to potentially take a $150,000 reduction in revenues in your next year. I mean, that's what these are for, is what are you going to do about that?
Well, what we did do was in our budget, we accounted for that. So our budget for the year shows significantly less based on the drop we saw last year and the projection for this year. So we accounted for that in the budget, saying, yes, we're going to be taking in less money. Yeah. We have to watch what we're spending. So
is your program designed to accommodate that? And do you have reserves the way building and safety does?
No, planning does not have reserves.
Because you operate off of the general fund.
Correct. So what we do is we just have to watch the spending. You know, we cut down on our supply budget. We cut down on conference budget, things of that nature, to try and accommodate some of this.
Well, the big one is to making strategic decisions on your advertising and your noticing requirements. So we didn't, you know, we need to be, that's why it was so important talking about the housing amendments. The difference between, because you can't just haphazardly propose to do a blah, blah, blah that requires countywide noticing.
Right.
I mean, that's really what the crux of this is. You can blow your delta in three notices. That has the potential countywide to be $50,000 very easily.
Yes.
So being strategic about how we put forward code amendment changes in buckets somewhat of, you know, you could do three instead of separating them out, three different ones, which is what I think you've tried to do.
And I budgeted for three regular notifications. So
okay.
I did budget three hearings for them.
I think if you said, well, we're going to save money and we're going to put them all out at once, you take the chance that all of them go down in flames.
No, but they're three separate things.
But they're three separate.
But they're not this. You
deals.
Can do all the same notice, but they're three separate ordinances. That's totally doable. And they have a severability clause, the housing amendments that we did. We have a severability. If one of these elements is found, blah, 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 that's fine. The rest of it can go. That's really key. So I don't know that it... Are you saying it pokes the beast style?
What I'm saying is that you understand severability clauses and everything else, but the normal person that gets that in the mail goes, vote no once, vote no all the way across.
It's not a poll.
Yeah,
it's a notice that this is potentially impacting.
Yeah. They're pushing too hard, too much, too fast. I'm going to go talk now.
That's possible.
And I'm going to go in. Boy, look at what all they're trying to do to me now. This is just too much. It's over. It's, what do you call that?
Overstepping.
Yeah, overstepping your authority, and they're just crazy up there at that courthouse. I'm going to take care of it.
These housing amendments are larger than all the four solid waste ordinances combined.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think we're going to get hardly anybody talking negatively, substantially. It's really the subject matter that I think is going to...
I hope you're right. I'm
here 8 years, and I'll tell you what's gone to elections and what hasn't. Substantively, this is substantial, maybe even more so than the solid waste ordinances that were proposed back in 2013. I haven't heard anything, and I've met with a few of those people. Haven't even talked about them. They've all been thumbs up, you know.
Yeah.
So I think the substance is really what's going to get people riled up.
And the presentation.
Yeah, how it's delivered.
How it's delivered.
It's a big part of it.
So there was a lot, with the housing amendments, there was a lot of selling up front. So I went to the realtors twice already with the information, sent them to the Builders Association, sent them to land use consultants, sent them to 1,000 Friends, which I expect will comment. Really went back and forth with DLCD to try and get them the best I can. That I'm really... And
the diligence that you did with that is just, it's crazy.
It is, but I it pays off in the end because I think, you know, when it went to the Plan Commission, we had no one show up on the housing amendments.
Right.
And I'm sure we will have some because it's a board meeting, but overall I think we really did a lot of homework up front to try and sell it as a positive thing.
I had a gentleman in yesterday and sending your way, so he'll be talking about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I told you were the person to explain those.
Good work.
Okay, so then the other ones I just include just so you can see the details of the income that's coming in. As you can see, for the last quarter, planning took in $88,000. And when you look at building safety for their quarter, they took in they don't total it, but you can see it was 201 just in the building fees and then another 37 in electrical. They always are about triple what the planning side does, and that's pretty consistent across the board that we see that. Next.
I think there are ways to reduce that. Some of the permit fees that I see that are either required by the state, they're just exorbitant.
You know where our highest fee comes is charging for Three River School District.
The construction excise tax.
Yes.
That they just willy-nilly said, no big deal, we're going to do it. Couldn't have gone to the mat for 5 seconds to say, I ain't doing it.
They don't have to collect it, so therefore they don't get the heat. You get the heat.
If you're looking at
it negatively impacts, okay, I have to reduce my overall footprint, commercial, you know, what Rogue Truck Body's doing out there at 50 cents a square foot. He's having to, you know, say, well, there's a person I'm not going to hire because I don't have the money. Mm-hmm. I just paid it to the school district. And I know there's a valid purpose and reason. It's the same thing that they're dealing with every other funding element. But that's not the place to go get it, where there's a family that's not going to move to Kirby or to Josephine County for a job with two kids, making it up at $6,000 a year if they're in the schools. I mean, it's like you're shooting yourself in the foot and you don't even...
Yeah, it's for, you know, we're trying to do everything we can to make single-family homes affordable. Permit on a single-family home, once you put that Three Rivers fee in there, it's about $3,000 for the fee. That's how much is going to the school district.
And two of that, $2,000 of it goes to the school.
If your permit's $5,000, $3,000 of that is going to the school.
60%.
And we're collecting it, and they're
screaming at us.
It's reflecting on you.
How's that brochure working out? People
still complain, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I just wanted to give you an update on
marijuana
stuff.
I mean,
so,
it is to me, but.
Because we haven't talked about that in a while, so I just wanted to give you a producer inventory. Just looking at the total, you've got 58 properties in the RR that are growing OLCC right now. That's 61 lux. And I broke it down, 33% of all OLCC, 38% of all OLCC approvals are on RR property, and 37% of all LUX issued are on RR property. So
I want to sit down with you in the near future because I have some meetings with Representative Hurd, Representative Lee, Dwayne Stark, and I had a conversation with the governor the other day, and a lot of it had to, the majority of the conversation was regarding the Southern Oregon Marijuana Initiative and numbers involved with that. And then I've got an invite to sit down with Jeff Rhodes, who is her marijuana right-hand person. And we're basically trying to lay out a roadmap for the beginning session of 19, legislative session. So I'm going to need some numbers more than anything, numbers, and go from there so we can put some dollar and cent amounts to it because that's what it hinges on, and then, you know, so on and so forth. What kind of revenue does this raise? And I need current numbers to do that. So we'll get together in the next week or so, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Lastly, I just wanted to share with you a memo that was put together for the Sheriff's Department. They're working on a grant, and they wanted some information about marijuana and violations. So this was put together for them. In a nutshell, of those, you know, Denise has received 1,277 marijuana-related complaints. Goes through and shows how many live out of state, 146. 559 of these are verified medical grows. 181 are approved OLCC sites. 635 of those reported are just illegal. And then just goes on to say at the end some other violations.
Now,
is
it 12? It's eight plants, two adults, four plants apiece is considered personal use. And then 12 plants, above 12 plants is considered on one property, considered other than personal use, commercial. There's no word commercial in any of it, but.
Right. yes, once you hit 12, then it becomes commercial. And that's 12 mature plants. So they can have their immature going as the mature are going, and then those get harvested, and then the other ones come up. So it's 12 mature. But they can have more plants than that. It's just that only 12 of them can be mature. So this was just some interesting information on the ones that had been called in to us. And like I said, they were using that for a grant that they're working on.
I thought they put a moratorium on processing Luxes.
They have. Yeah, they have.
So we have 154 additional pending Luxes applications.
Because they started, we've been accepting Lux for 2.5 years. So there's a lot of them that they have not gotten to yet. And that's why they put a halt on it, because there's such a backlog of Lux that they have not processed.
Is there some point in time when we just say, we're not taking any Lux from now on out? We've got enough on, I mean, just stop it. We you know, if you've applied and you're in the system, that's fine. But that's it. They could just go on year after year after year after year until where you don't have any rural residential that's free of having a marijuana grow next to it. I think that's what the complaint I'm hearing. A lot of it's backed off. You know, some of my friends out in the Leonard Road area, nope, the neighbors are now growing tomatoes and looks like they're putting in some grapes and stuff. No marijuana on two out of the three sides. So, you know, I think the marketplace may have done that, but I don't want it to go back if the marketplace all of a sudden gets really well. And again, I don't want it to come back and say, okay, we're firing up the old Lux machine again. Say, no, we're done. You go to EFU from now on out. There's a drop-dead date, and that's it. We're not taking any Lux from now on out for any reason having to do with cannabis.
Well, the board did discuss that and was going to propose that, and, of course, we didn't. We didn't go through with that, but, you know, we could bring that order back.
I'd like to see that. Commissioner Hare, do you have any, you know, you're kind of on the downhill slope of that, but do you see anything concerned you on that?
The state isn't doing something. There's in the Oregonian today about how there's just a flood from Josephine County, Southern Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was just a report that was put out talking about how bad it was. I don't know if you saw that one, but so there is something in the regulations that says when they hit an oversaturation point, the state can stop accepting them. And I did write OLCC to ask what that was, and I didn't get a response.
Okay. All right. Well,
I think it has to be done locally.
Keep that on your radar, because if we need to do it locally, I'd like to listen to that. I'm sure that Commissioner Morgan would also, and Commissioner Harris. I think because we have to at some point in time say that's enough. That is enough. You know, we are producing more than our fair share of the state's requirement. That's for darn sure. So let's just, you know, hey, if you go to somebody of some other county, they want to move it to Douglas or whatever, or, you know, go pressure them for a while. Because we're losing our citizenry is what we're losing.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to do that anymore.
Let's chat after this.
Okay.
That
is it.
Okay, Commissioner Hare, do you have any other questions?
No, we can do it on legal.
Okay. Okay. With that, we'll move on to item number 6, additional subject matters from the commissioners. I don't have any either, so with that, we are adjourned at 10:33.